This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, and we're getting real local today talking about neighborhoods. Downtown Raleigh's Oakwood neighborhood will bustle this weekend as folks turn out for the annual Candlelight Tour of Homes. That tour gives homeowners a chance to check out their Victorian, Craftsman, and Queen Anne homes in the deep greens and reds of the season. It's also a chance for the neighborhood's historic society to raise a little money. And that's been the case since residents hastily organized their first candlelight tour in 1972. Back then, they were fighting a planned freeway that would have demolished the neighborhood. Recently, Oakwood neighborhoods have begun recording the story of their community by interviewing one another. And heading the effort to record Oakwood's history is Lisa Ogburn. She's an Oakwood resident and teaches at Duke's Center for Documentary Studies. Lisa, welcome to the program. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Also with us is Randy Hester. He is a professor emeritus of landscape, architecture, and environmental planning at the University of California at Berkeley. And he helped lead the fight to save Oakwood in the 1970s. Today he lives in Durham. Randy, good to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Lisa, you're a relative newcomer to Oakwood, and one of the things your project offered you, I guess, is a chance to get to know your neighbors. How did this whole thing come about? Tell us how it works.
Sure. I've been here in Oakwood since 2003. One of the neighbors, Jerry Blow, last year approached me about this project. We'd had another long-term resident pass away without gaining their stories, and a group of neighbors got together and identified those stories we had to capture. So that's
and,
how it started.
And another guy I got to know was Matthew Brown. Tell us about him.
Matthew Brown has been in the neighborhood for about 30 years now. He's a fixture on his bicycle with his seersucker suit that he rides to work and is our local historian.
And he's been there quite a while, collected a history of the place that stretches back, I think, to the founding, right, in the 19th century. Let's listen to a bit of this interview.
You know, people have this idea that Oakwood was this fine Victorian neighborhood with, you know, people in fancy dresses and grand houses. It wasn't nothing like that. It was the edge of a little town. The streets were all dirt. There were no sidewalks, or there were dirt sidewalks. A lot of the yards were dirt. The thing that kept it from getting overgrown was all the chickens.
There you go. Oakwood resident Matthew Brown talking about the beginnings of the neighborhood. Now, then the neighborhood experienced a rise to prominence probably in the 1910s and 20s after the Second World War started to go downhill a little bit. And then by the 60s, I guess, started showing its age. So it really had a history. And I mean, it's interesting to think about that neighborhood, which is premier neighborhood now in Raleigh. A bunch of chickens trying to keep the weeds down. Huh? Mm-hmm. And Randy, when did you first get interested in the Oakwood neighborhood?
Well, I was a student at NC State starting in 1963. And very soon, as part of design studies, we were involved in all sorts of neighborhoods in downtown. And so by 1965, I was working in Chavis Heights, which is the African-American neighborhood just south of Oakwood. But even though it's very different demographically, they shared a common threat. And so pretty soon in the 60s, I was working with both neighborhoods.
And what were those neighborhoods like then?
Well, let's see. I lived in both. Chavis Heights was, at that time, I thought it was the most extraordinary neighborhood I'd ever lived in. It was desperately poor. Don't get me wrong. And I don't romanticize this. It was poor. Mm. There was only one running vehicle on my street, and Mr. Charlie's car, we would all repair it on Saturday and pile in and go to the grocery store. But it had an incredible sense of neighborhood. You could count on anyone in that neighborhood to do anything you needed, and it was very different than the more middle-class neighborhoods I'd grown up in. Oakwood was at that time pretty run down and in some ways had less of a sense of community than Chavis Heights. Mm. It was much more transient. Chavis Heights was And people had been living there for a long time.
By then, I guess a lot of the owners had moved out, and maybe they were renting properties. So the families that had established themselves, they left. Now they're starting to rent their property in Oakwood.
Yeah.
And in fact, you've got an oral history here. Talk to Betsy Buford, who met her neighbor, Harvey Bumgardner, as she moved in the 1970s.
The first day after I really moved in, Harvey came to the door carrying big armfuls of roses. And I had almost no furniture, but I had roses, thanks to Harvey Bumgardner. And he kept saying, well, good luck on the frontier. And we were chatting, and I fixed some tea, and he finally got to leave, and he said, well, good luck on the frontier. And I said, Harvey, why are you telling me good luck on the frontier instead of saying good luck in historic Oakwood or Oakwood? And he stood on my front porch, and he said, because, darling, there's a shooting or a knifing on that corner every Saturday night. And that's why we call it a frontier.
Lisa, I wonder what it was like for you to hear stories like Betsy Buford's. When you moved in, it was historic Oakwood. They never said one without the other, right?
That's right. No, it was a whole different world when Betsy Buford and Ames Christopher and Stuart Woodard and a number of the other folks moved in the early 70s. At that time, a number of the properties were condemned. And pulling one story out just was like unraveling a sweater. Just more and more stories and people were identified who we needed to capture.
I wonder what it does for you as a resident who came to the neighborhood after all of this, and once it had been gentrified, more or less, to think about where you're living, having heard those stories, how that changes your sense of place and position.
I feel a deep gratitude to the folks who really worked tremendously hard to restore house by house. It gives a depth to the walks that I take with my children through the neighborhood, as well as it's this living project where as soon as we post an interview, there's a number of comments as well as suggestions for other people to interview.
Well, Randy, you couldn't have restored those houses if they'd all been paved over, which might have been the case had the North-South Freeway gone through.
Yeah. And I think 1969, the city adopted a thoroughfare plan that called for a major expressway like 147 in Durham that would have gone through Chavis Heights and Oakwood and would have, I believe, been the death of both of those neighborhoods.
And it didn't. Talk about the effort and the successful effort to keep that highway from going through.
There were hundreds of people involved, people in Wake Environment, people in both in Oakwood and Chavis Heights, but also all over Raleigh. By 1970, people realized that the thoroughfare plan was a threat all over the city. It would have negatively impacted almost every neighborhood, not just those two. So there was a movement building, and I had been in Boston fighting the Interbelt, which would have also smashed through poorest neighborhoods in Cambridge. And this was happening all over the country. We were building freeways, urban freeways, to serve a suburban population with no consideration whatsoever for the people who lived in the inner city. The effort built city council after city council struggled with this. And then finally, in the mid-70s, there was a commitment on the part of the city council to stop this destruction in Raleigh.
Well, the interesting thing is very few cities were successful in the way that they were in Raleigh. And I guess that has to do with the fact that part of the plan included the white neighborhood of Oakwood.
There's no question. In San Francisco, for example, the American public, it was federal policy, built the same kind of freeway, and it was an elevated freeway. And it went through all of the unpowerful neighborhoods, And when it got to the powerful neighborhood, it stopped in midair. And only earthquake destroyed it. We were doing this everywhere. And the coalition, I think, that finally pushed it over in Raleigh to stop the freeway was Oakwood.
Lisa, the struggle, of course, to keep it alive is very much alive. To keep it going is very much alive in that neighborhood. You talked about your sense of gratitude. Is there a deeper sense of commitment, a kind of more democratic feel, like we can do something about this here in this neighborhood?
Absolutely. I mean, that the neighborhood stays involved in many local politics, that from the magnet program to others, with the same spirit of that first founding group. If you go back to the first candlelight tour in 1972, it was October when the city announced that the North-South Freeway would be going through. And by that December, the Oakwood Historic Society had been founded and incorporated, and they had made the commitment to start the candlelight tour in order to bring the rest of Raleigh down to see what they would lose should this happen.
And how did that go? To describe it, it was maybe $2 to go on the tour? And
$2, handmade posters. There were only a few people who had fine enough furniture, so there was couch swapping going on across the roads. Everyone who could was involved. And they had perhaps 200 folks that first year, and the profits from that were used for attorney fees and mailing fees for the petitions that they were sending out across the city to stop the freeway.
A little helpful as a fundraiser. Any sense that it also had the desired effect of making the rest of Raleigh more aware of what was at stake here?
Absolutely. It now brings over 1,000 folks down. That those efforts are continued. There's hundreds of people involved in the planning of each tour.
I want to go back to Matthew Brown again. We heard him just a little bit earlier. He's kind of Oakwood's unofficial historian. And he talks about why people may remain enthusiastic even today.
100 years from now, at 2111, if there still is an America and a human civilization, look at this neighborhood and realize that we fought for every inch of it. We fought for every window and every roof and every bush and every street. And a lot of people for many years put a lot of love into this.
Randy Hester, I know that you've said the whole project and its success in saving Chavis Heights and Oakwood was made you a kind of proponent of gentrification, which surprised even you.
Well, I think that there is no question, those of us who consider ourselves progressive, we have these knee-jerk reactions, and that gentrification in my circles was completely negative. And when I began to discuss the possibility that gentrification in some forms was important, my colleagues just thought I'd gone bonkers. This was a complete violation. But the North-South Freeway would have been built, and it would have destroyed the most important African-American community in Raleigh if it hadn't been for the gentrification that was going on in Oakwood. When Tom Bashford cast his vote, he was a city councilman representing Oakwood. When he cast his vote to stop that freeway, he was the deciding vote. And otherwise, much more destruction would have happened. So there's no question that there has to be some controls on gentrification. You have to be really cautious about it, but you do need some people with professional and powerful vocations to be a part of the inner city.
Well, the key is not to exploit the poverty of the neighborhood to go in and get good bargains. So you can do two things at once. You can upscale some of the more downtrodden and desperate-looking places. Then if you empower the local neighbors to go to City Hall, get the lights put in, get the crime reduced, all the things that have driven property values down, you can actually improve everybody's property values, including the new developer. And there are examples of that here, certainly in Durham and in Raleigh. Lisa, there's some other stories. You've got some great stories in your collection. Tell us about Mary Lou Wooten. Who's she?
Mary Lou Wooten runs Side Street Restaurant. She has since 1979, and she's just a fixture and a well-loved fixture in the neighborhood. She's known for bringing by leftover catering supplies whenever someone's had a baby or their spouse is ill.
She tells this great story about a guy named Percy Gilmore. Now, Percy was a handyman who lived in the neighborhood. Mary Lou Wooten talks about Percy Gilmore's funeral. Let's listen.
My favorite storybook would by far have to be when we lost him. We lost him to a fire in a car. When we lost him, we had a memorial service about 3 or 4 weeks after we had taken him, Donald, Betsy's husband, and my brother and I, and two other friends had taken him to Mississippi and buried him with his grandfather, which is where we knew he'd want to be buried. But the best part of that memorial service was the church that's down here on the corner of East and Lane. That church was standing room only. It was full of people that were white and black and straight and gay and male and female, well-educated, illiterate, very rich and very poor. And they sat and stood side by side by side by side and were joyful of this man's life. That's what I love about Oakwood.
And that is Oakwood resident Mary Lou Wooten, one of the voices and stories collected by one of my guests today, Lisa Ogburn. Lisa, what got you involved in this? Why did you want to do this?
I was initially approached to help start the project. And then after doing the first few interviews and beginning to get into the content and listen to it, I became just as obsessed as the neighbors. And it's just been now I'm hearing the voices in my head a lot, and I'm imagining the next interview still to come.
What's been the biggest surprise for you?
I suppose I just want to figure out how to continue doing this type of work. It gives me an excuse to dive right into the heart of a story with people I deeply respect.
Randy, as you see a project like this, and then Gary Kieber's project in Durham, I mean, what's the value of these things? Having them available online, being able to capture history this way.
Well, the most obvious is that if we don't learn from those past mistakes and successes, we'll repeat the mistakes and we won't have the successes.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program. Great to talk with you today.
Likewise.
Likewise. Thank you.
Lisa Ogburn is an instructor at Duke University's Center for Documentary Studies and heads up the Oakwood Project. And you can hear more of those stories at oakwoodproject.org. Randy Hester is a professor emeritus of landscape architecture and environmental planning and urban design at the University of California at Berkeley. He now lives in Durham. The Oakwood Candlelight Tour runs Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 7. And for details on that, you go to historicoakwood.org. Just ahead, swinging holiday tunes with John Brown. Stay tuned.